WBOB.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Today, our topic is going to be parasites.
I love parasites. In the springtime.
Beautiful song by Ella Fitzgerald, but those are not the parasites that we're going to talk about. Okay, raise your hand if you believe there's a problem of parasites in the United States. I don't see many hands, but don't worry, that would be the majority of Americans. Unfortunately, there is a problem. So today we are going to talk about the five most common parasitic diseases in the United States. These include Chagas disease, cysticercosis, toxocariasis, toxoplasmosis, and trichomoniasis. Some we'll talk about today and some in our next show. There's just too much interesting info to include all in one show.
Chagas disease is named after Brazilian physician Carlos Chagas, who discovered that it is caused by the parasite Trypanosoma cruzi, and affects over 300,000 persons in the U.S. today.
It's only found in the Americas, and it's transmitted to animals and people by insects. Unfortunately, if it remains untreated, the infection can be lifelong and life-threatening. Many more are, maybe as many as 8 million people in Mexico, Central America, and South America who have Chagas disease.
In the United States, strategies to control infection need to be focused on preventing transmission from blood transfusion and organ transplantation. Also, there may be congenital transmission. This means mother to baby in the womb. The insect vectors are called triatomite bugs.
Oh my God! You don't mean the kissing bug, do you?
Yes, I do.
Why do they call them kissing bugs?
Well, because they tend to bite you around the mouth while you sleep.
Oh, that's disgusting.
And they're most active after dark.
These blood-sucking bugs themselves are infected by biting another infected animal or person. Once infected, the bugs pass the Trypanosoma cruzi parasites in their feces.
During the day, the bugs hide in crevices in the walls and the roofs. During the night, though, when the inhabitants are sleeping, the bugs emerge. After they bite and ingest blood, well, for lack of a better word, they poop on the person.
If the person scratches, the feces can get on the fingers and under the fingernails, and later enter your body through mucous membranes, or breaks in the skin.
They can even enter your body if the stool is dropped in your eye or you swallow it. And don't forget consumption of uncooked food contaminated with feces from any infected bugs.
Breastfeeding mothers should probably refrain from breastfeeding if they have any abrasions or lesions, even small ones around the nipples, until those sores heal totally.
Although Chagas disease can be found anywhere in the world, it is simply most common in the Americas. So what would make you suspect that you might have Chagas disease? First, you need to understand that there are actually two phases to Chagas disease, the acute phase and the chronic phase. Now, both phases can actually be symptom-free or life-threatening.
The acute phase lasts for the first few weeks or months of infection. It usually occurs unnoticed because it is symptom-free or exhibits only mild symptoms and signs that are not unique to Chagas disease.
The symptoms noted by the patient are most often fever, fatigue, body aches, headache, and rash. Now, up to this point, it resembles many other medical problems, so it is often overlooked initially. On physical exam, the physician may find that the patient has mild enlargement of the liver or spleen, swollen glands, and local swelling. Now, the swelling occurs where the parasite entered the body.
It is around this time in the disease that the most telling symptoms occurs. It is called Romania's sign. This is swelling of the eyelids on the side of the face near the bite wound or where the bug feces were deposited or accidentally rubbed into the eye.
One problem is that even if symptoms develop during the acute phase, they usually fade away on their own within a few weeks or months.
Well, that does not sound like a problem. However, it is, since if you left untreated, the infection persists even when the symptoms have disappeared.
Let me explain how serious this disease can be. Some young children, less than 5%, die from severe inflammation of the heart muscle or the brain due to this infection. And in many instances, if a person has a weakened immune system, that person can die during the acute phase of Chagas disease.
As we said, there is a chronic phase. Many times the infection lies dormant for decades or even for life. However, some people develop cardiac complications, including an enlarged heart failure, altered heart rate or rhythm, and cardiac arrest. That means sudden death.
There are also intestinal complications, which can include an enlarged esophagus or colon and can lead to difficulties with eating or with passing stool. Most of the time, there are simply no risky complications, but in 30% of cases, there are.
Now that you have learned about the disease, suppose you one day have the symptoms we described and decide to see your healthcare provider. What might be ordered?
First, there will probably be blood tests. You should also have an electrocardiogram, also called an EKG or ECG, to see if there are any heart problems, even if you feel fine.
Now the question is, what is next if you are diagnosed with Chagas disease? What would be next even if your EKG is normal?
The doctor may still need to give you an antiparasitic medication that's used to treat Chagas disease. It's certainly best to treat this disease early. Most people, however, and luckily, do not need to be hospitalized during treatment.
But at least 1,000 people are hospitalized with nodal cystic silicosis every year. We talk about the two phases. Well, the treatment plan is different during each phase.
In August of 2017, the U.S. FDA granted approval of the first treatment for Chagas disease. It's called benznidazole. It can be used in children aged 2 to 12, but it, however, is not available in pharmacies. The drug can be obtained only through the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC.
Another drug called Nifurtimox is also now available in the U.S., but like benznidazole, it is not available in pharmacies and can only be provided by the CDC.
Unfortunately, once Chagas disease reaches the chronic phase, medications just won't cure it. But the drugs may be offered to people younger than age 50 because they may help slow the progression of the disease and its most serious complications.
The next on our list is a parasite that each year causes blindness in at least 70 people, most of them children. It is called toxocariasis. And more than 60 million persons are chronically infected with Toxoplasma gondii.
As a matter of fact, each year, 1.1 million people are newly infected with Toxoplasma gondii.
It happens to be a parasitic infection due to a roundworm called Toxocara. It comes in two varieties, since it is transmitted to humans from the intestine of dogs and cats.
The parasite is called Toxocara canis if it came from dogs, and naturally Toxocara cati if the origin is from cats. Can you get it?
Well, yes, you can, especially if you are a young child or the owner of dogs or cats who have a higher chance of getting the infection. Anyone can become infected with Toxocara.
Young children and owners of dogs and cats have a higher chance of becoming infected. The total number of dogs owned are almost 70 million, while there are over 74 million cats owned in the United States. Remember that around 36% of all U.S. households have dogs and 30% have cats. When tests were performed, it was found that around 13.9% of the U.S. population has antibodies to Toxocara. Well, what does this mean? It means that tens of millions of Americans may have been exposed to the Toxocara parasite at some time in their lives.
Now that we know the chances of getting this parasitic disease, you need to understand how you can get it. First, the animals get infected and then check the Toxocara parasite in their feces. You or your children can become infected by accidentally swallowing dirt that has been contaminated with dog or cat feces that contain infectious Toxocara eggs. Although it is rare, people can even become infected from eating undercooked meat containing Toxocara larvae.
Just as we talked about it at the start of the show, we need to know the symptoms of the disease. First, many people who are infected with Toxocara don't even have any symptoms and don't ever get sick. But some people may develop ocular toxocariasis if the parasitic larvae migrate to the eye. Symptoms here include vision loss, eye inflammation, or damage to the retina. Usually, only one eye is affected.
When Toxocara larvae move to other body organs, such as the liver or central nervous system, it is then called visceral toxocariasis. At this point, the symptoms include fever, fatigue, coughing, wheezing, or abdominal pain.
You may be wondering just how serious is this disease? Well, the name certainly is demoralizing. In most cases, Toxocara infections are not serious. And many people, especially adults infected by a small number of larvae, which are immature worms, may not even notice any symptoms. It is most often spread to humans from puppies who get it from their mothers before birth or from their mother's milk.
The Toxocara carnis larvae mature in the puppy's intestine, and when the pup is just 3 or 4 weeks old, begin to produce large numbers of eggs that contaminate the environment through the animal's feces.
Then, over a 2 to 4 week time period, the larvae develop in the eggs. Visceral toxocariasis is treated with antiparasitic drugs such as mebendazole and thiabendazole. Also, the patient may be given corticosteroids and specific organ treatment. The prognosis of toxocariasis is pretty darn good.
However, treatment of ocular toxocariasis is more difficult and usually consists of measures to prevent progressive damage to the eye. Chemotherapy is the treatment of choice in most patients with liver, lung, or eye involvement.
Occasionally, ocular involvement requires ocular surgery, so you don't want toxocariasis. So, what do you do? First, take your pets to the veterinarian who can recommend a testing and treatment plan for deworming.
Also, wash your hands with soap and water after playing with any of your pets or other animals, after outdoor activities, and certainly before handling food.
Since children aren't born with the understanding of infections and parasites, you need to teach them, starting at an early age, the importance of washing hands to prevent infection.
And it goes without saying that you need to make sure that children are not allowed to play in areas that are soiled with pet or other animal feces.
Making it a weekly thing to clean your pet's living area. And remember that feces should be either buried or bagged and disposed of in the trash. And then wash your hands after handling pet waste. You may think about this, but teach your children that it is dangerous to eat dirt or soil.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. 11 Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Next on our list, which is in no particular order, is Giardia, which is a protozoan parasite that causes giardiasis in humans.
You might have heard the term protozoa, especially in your school years, as the parasite was often classified as a protozoan animal. Well, it's no longer considered a part of the animal world. It's simply a single-celled parasite which feeds on organic matter, such as other microorganisms, or organic tissues and debris.
This particular protozoan parasite called Giardia is ingested via food and water and affects the small intestine where it begins to multiply and colonize.
Its symptoms include flatulence, diarrhea, abdominal cramps, vomiting, loss of appetite, fatigue, weakness, and weight loss. Now, these symptoms are frequently seen in travelers, but usually resolve in a few weeks without any treatment.
So if you notice these symptoms after traveling anywhere away from home and the symptoms persist, then you need to see your physician.
Pets frequently contract Giardia. You can also get giardiasis by eating contaminated food or drinking contaminated water. And Giardia, it can be found all over the world.
The most common way to get giardiasis is to drink water that contains Giardia. Contaminated water can be in swimming pools, spas, and bodies of water such as lakes.
The sources of contamination include animal feces, diapers, and what they call agricultural runoff. Contracting giardiasis from food is less common because heat kills the parasites. Well, that gives you an idea of how you can prevent infection from giardiasis. Handling food with poor hygiene or eating produce rinsed in contaminated water can allow the parasite to spread.
In the majority of cases, giardiasis eventually clears up on its own. However, doctor might prescribe medications if your infection is severe or prolonged.
Most physicians will recommend that you get treatment with antiparasitic drugs rather than leaving it to heal on its own. Certain antibiotics are commonly used to treat giardiasis. One of these medications is metronidazole. Now, you may be more familiar with its brand name, Flagyl, because it's also used in the treatment of other abdominal, vaginal, and intestinal infections. Unfortunately, it does have side effects that include nausea, and it leaves a really metallic taste in your mouth.
Tinidazole, brand name Tindamax, often treats giardiasis in a single dose, and it is effective as metronidazole.
It is used to treat certain infections caused by bacteria, such as infections of the intestines or vagina. It's also used to treat certain sexually transmitted diseases.
Then we have nitazoxanide, which is a popular option for children because it is available in liquid form. It is an oral medication that prevents growth of Giardia lamblea and another parasite called Cryptosporidium parvum.
It is marketed under the brand name Alinia, and there is simply no generic form available as of this date. It has been approved since mid-2004 in the United States.
Last on our list of antibiotics for Giardia is paromomycin. It is an antibiotic used to treat a number of infections, including amebiasis, giardiasis, leishmaniasis, and tapeworm infection. And it is a first-line treatment for amebiasis or giardiasis during pregnancy.
Now we come to Enterobius vermicularis. I always like that name. It's the most prevalent nematode in the United States. Around 209 million adults and 30% of children worldwide are infected by this parasite and show symptoms associated with the infection. So what is a nematode?
They are commonly known as roundworms. There are over 40,000 species known to exist.
They can be distinguished from other forms of worms since they have tubular digestive systems with openings at both ends. Nematodes have successfully adapted to nearly every ecosystem, from marine salt to freshwater, soils from the polar regions to the tropics, as well as the highest to the lowest of elevations.
They are found in freshwater, marine, and terrestrial environments, where they often outnumber other animals.
They are found in every part of the Earth's top 60-mile layer. There are about 35 nematode species that occur in humans.
This parasite is also present in the intestine, and the infection can last 4 to 6 weeks in the absence of host autoinfection. Symptoms include constant perianal and vaginal itching in humans.
Prolonged infection can lead to urinary tract infection, appendicitis, and weight loss. Now, getting back to Enterobius vermicularis. By the way, did you know that this is the term for pinworm? Some even call them threadworms.
The life cycle of the pinworm begins with eggs being ingested, which hatch in the first part of the small intestine and later emerge as pinworm larvae, which grow rapidly, later migrating down the small intestine towards the colon.
During this migration, they become adults. The females survive for 5 to 13 weeks, and the males, well, just about 7 weeks. They mate in the last part of the small intestine, and it's here that the male pinworms usually die and are passed out with the stool. But the pregnant female pinworms, they settle in the intestine, including the appendix and the first part of the colon, where they attach themselves to the mucosa and ingest colonic contents.
The eggs initially are found around the anus and can survive for up to 3 weeks there. They may then be swallowed following contamination of the hands, food, or other articles such as clothing.
Those at risk are those who go to school, live in a healthcare institution or prison, or take care of people who are infected. Here is one parasitic disease that is not carried by other animals.
Drugs such as mebendazole, pyrantel pamoid, and albendazole are acted against enterobios vermiculitis.
The symptoms themselves are itching and irritation, and they should be treated symptomatically. Remember that reinfection with E. vermicularis immediately after the completion of drug therapy is common. And finally, very quickly, we have number 5 on our list, called the filarial worm, which causes filariasis in humans.
Symptoms of this roundworm infection include swollen feet and lower limbs. This worm stays beneath the human skin and does not cause any symptoms initially.
This parasite circulates in the blood and upon maturing enters the lymphatic system and develops while it lives there for more than 5 years. It affects the lymphatic nodes and causes retention of fluids, and that's what results in swelling. With prolonged exposure and repeated infection, skin hardening and thickening are also seen.
A medication called diethylcarbamycin, or DEC for short, is the drug of choice in the United States. The drug kills the microfilaria and some of the adult worms.
Unfortunately, because this infection is rare in the U.S., the drug is no longer approved by the FDA, that's the Food and Drug Administration, and cannot be sold in the U.S. But this doesn't mean that physicians can't get it. They can obtain the medication from the CDC after confirmed positive lab tests.
One-day treatment is generally as effective as a 12-day regimen, and it is well-tolerated. Side effects are in general limited and depend on the number of microfilariae in the blood.
The most common side effects are dizziness, nausea, fever, headache, or pain in muscles or joints. I said we'd cover 5, but we have a few seconds more on the show, so let's quickly look at hookworms.
Necator americanus is one such species that is found widely in the Americas and Caribbean. The hookworm attaches itself to the intestinal walls and feeds on human blood.
This worm consumes up to 0.25 milliliter of blood per day and can lead to anemia. The infection of this parasite can also result in physical and mental retardation in children.
Hookworms are parasites. Did we mention that the term parasite simply means that they live off other living things?
Anyway, hookworms affect your lungs, skin, and small intestine. Humans contract hookworms through hookworm larvae found in dirt contaminated by feces. Treatment includes medications that destroy parasites, such as albendazole or albenza, and mebendazole, with the brand name Emverm. These medications are generally taken just once to treat the infection.
You might also need an iron supplement if you have anemia.
Wow, well, we breezed through the parasites. We hope that you enjoyed learning about them, and hopefully you've learned how to recognize them and prevent them.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.